The purpose or the goal is to experience our true infinite nature, which is beyond these limited bodies and the limited minds. That is why we crave or we look for infinite. And what is the means for that? The means is to connect oneself to that which is permanent and detach oneself from that which is temporary, which is continuously changing. This is how it was shown in the second chapter as the criterion for what is real and what is unreal. That which keeps on changing is unreal. That which does not change is real. Because we get connected to the changing things, we attach ourselves to the changing things, we become limited, and that becomes the cause of our suffering. So, if we detach ourselves from this changing, then we will realize our true nature. And this is called yoga. Now, in this fourth chapter, Lord is telling, we saw that in last class, that the divine source of this knowledge hasn't been spun out by somebody through just intellectual gymnastics. This is also not just discovered through some human level experimentations. This is much deeper than that. The source of this knowledge is divine. It is verified and verifiable, but that doesn't mean that it is just like the knowledge of some physical science. Physical science also is verified and verifiable. But the difference is its conclusions keep on shifting, keep on changing. What was thought to be right some time back gets changed after some time. Our understanding becomes different. That is what is called the evolution of physical science. Physical science is by its very nature empirical. That is, whatever you know right now, you base your conclusions on that by just connecting the facts. Some facts you know, and then you connect them together and come to a conclusion. That is the physical science. Then you verify it. As long as you can, that verification works, you think that it is right. You work on that, taking for granted that that is how the reality is. But more facts come to light. Now your database gets expanded. New connections get formed. The old connections that you were earlier thought to be right get overruled. New symmetries are seen. New verifications show that what you earlier thought to be right is not fully right, and thus a new conclusion emerges. So, the physical science is changeable, and therefore whatever conclusion that you come to through the process of physical science is subject to an error. It is subject to an error through physical science. Somebody may think that the solution for all our the different types of governing the motion at different levels His answer is given by Newton's laws. But then you find after some centuries that that is not sufficient. That does not really govern all the motions. And so you have to now expand your understanding. So whatever you know through your sense organs, and then collect those facts, arrive at conclusion. This is in general the method of physical science, and the conclusions that we come to through this process are fallible. They are not true for all the time. It goes on evolving. This knowledge, the divine knowledge, this is also verified and verifiable. To that extent, it is scientific. But it goes beyond the physical science in that it is true forever, because this is not dependent on the data collected by the human beings, a little data here, a little data there, not dependent on that. It includes that, but it goes far beyond. It is connected with the true nature of our being. And so, this knowledge is permanent. This is told because when we hear these words of wisdom, we get a feeling that maybe it is right, but maybe there is some mistake in that knowledge. Like all my scientific knowledge, this knowledge also may have a little error. Is there a chance of error in this? And if there it is, how much is the chance of error? We see in the different these, like the weather forecast, it is they predict on the basis of all the tools that they have. It is scientific, no doubt, but yet there is a margin of error depending on how many parameters they are able to see. The margin of error varies. Sometimes it is 100% wrong, sometimes it is 100% right, depending on, because not all parameters are under control. And so, something suddenly crops up that they had not figured out. Last Sunday, for example, the prediction was it is going to be rainy, but it became sunny because something happened that they didn't have control over. And so it became sunny. Monday was not earlier supposed to be rainy, but Monday became terribly rainy. This happens. That doesn't mean that it is wrong. It has its limitations. So a person will think that so this knowledge that is told by Lord may be correct, like the knowledge that we get in our science, but has some margin of error. Some mistakes might be there. So Lord clarifies, no, this is the knowledge divine. It comes from a very different source. It is not dependent on the human perceptions. It is not dependent on the error-prone human machinery. And therefore, it is intrinsically perfect. So, after telling this, the importance of this that we should follow it with conviction. And not that if there is the chance of error, if I already know that there is a chance of error in it, I will not be following it with full confidence. So, that is why Lord has told that, know that this is the not being told to you by a human being. It is told to you by a human form. But the being that is telling you is divine. The God has assumed human form to bring this truth to us at our level, where we can see it, where we can understand and assimilate it. There the form of Lord is like the loudspeaker. By loudspeakers, the sound system, the sound is carried. Now one may say that the speaker is kind of speaking, now you are seeing me. But there are speakers of this system put in different places. One is upstairs in the children's room, one is in the basement in our dining room, and one is there in the library too. Now if somebody is sitting there and listening, now what will be the perception? That person is not visually seeing me. So it may appear that that speaker is speaking. The words are coming from the speaker. Now the speaker is certainly an instrument from which they are coming. But the person is different. The speaker is different. A speaker like this Swami is speaking, and it is carried by the sound system, and then an instrument is making you hear it. So the divine manifests at our level. Our level is important. If the speaker is not where that person is, then the person will not be able to hear. Therefore it is very important that the manifestation is at our level. When I go to Puerto Rico, then although I speak in English, a lady keeps on continuously translating it in Spanish, because many there, or rather most, do not understand the English. So that has to come to them in Spanish. It comes to them in Spanish. Because it has to come at their level. So the divine message has to come at the human level. Just as for the Spanish people to understand, it has to come in Spanish language at that level. So similarly, for human beings to understand the divine message, it has to come in human form, at human level. But that does not mean that the source is human. The source is divine. It is coming at the human level. So that is what one must understand about these scriptures. It is very, very scientific as far as the verifiability of it goes. But it is far beyond the scope of ordinary physical science, because it is, its origin is divine. Now, the verse that we just read last Friday's class didn't discuss much about it, that this knowledge can be verified, has been verified by so many people. The efficacy of that knowledge is it transforms the life. The knowledge, when it is imbibed, it brings about the change in one's life. The simple knowledge that, for example, that when you know that there is a bus that comes here and that takes you to your place of work or school, that you have a service here. When you get that knowledge, now you were earlier wondering how to go to a place. When you get the knowledge, that knowledge makes you get that facility available for you. So, thus you can make use of it. When we know about electricity, that knowledge, what happens with that? When we didn't know, we could not use all these electric equipments that come because of that knowledge. That knowledge transforms our life. The knowledge becomes a tool by which the life gets transformed. What happens with this knowledge? That is being discussed here, that
Vitarag Bhaya Krodha Manmaya Mamupashritaha Bahovo Jnana Tapasa Puta Madbhava Magataha.
This is the 10th verse of the 4th chapter. Free from attachment, fear and anger, with their minds intent on me, purified by knowledge and penance, many have attained my being. This is what happens. Those who get this knowledge, implement that knowledge, they become one with divine. And what are the steps? What happens with that knowledge? It is very interesting if we look at this in contrast of our day-to-day present life. What changes occur? When we see that, then we will see the benefit of it. Like they show that if in the ads, like the weight-reducing advertisements, that if you, and they show that if you take this diet or take this exercise, then there will be this transformation in your life. They show the pictures before, a huge plump figure like that, before, and then after, a slim figure. If you take this before and after, the efficacy is shown that that person did this exercise for 3 months or 4 months, and 60 pounds were reduced. So instead of looking like this, now that person looks very attractive and slim. In ads, they make it look more attractive. That is another thing. In ads, they, of course, that the earlier, that before figure is shown as ugly and as plump as possible. And in the after figure, they show it as beautiful as possible, so that they will be able to sell the product. So, in this particular knowledge, if one imbibes, what happens? What changes take place? The life changes. Like the one who is attached to the perishable, because you think that I am this body and mind. I am so and so limited. We all have this sense of imperfection attached to us. I am imperfect. I am such and such. And I need to get many things from the world so that I will gradually become fulfilled, perfected. One feels that, well, you see, I am imperfect, I don't have enough money. If I get this much money, then things will become so nice. So what happens? My sense of imperfection makes me connect to money, that let me have that, and I keep on working for that. I have, because of the feeling of imperfection, that yes, I am a man or I am a woman, so feel the sense of imperfection, and so I feel another man or woman, if I get that in my life, then my life will be so nice, perfect. So I run for that let me find a man that suits me, or a woman that suits me, and that will bring perfection to my life. So I run after that and get attached to those things. What happens is, I can never get any of these things. What I get is bondage. The end result is I get attached to those things. I do not get those, I get only the attachment. It is, that is the end result of this. One may feel that, yes, I have got all this money. What is the nature of money? Money is continuously in flux. The very nature of money is that it is money only when it is in flux. When it is not going from you, it is not money. The trouble with money is you want to have the money. Say I have a $500 bill in my pocket. Is it $500? It is, if it is sitting in my pocket, it is just paper. It is not $500. It becomes $500 when I go to the shop and try to buy something by it. When I buy, then it becomes $500, but then it goes. It doesn't stay. So, that is the problem with money. You cannot hold on to it. When you hold on to it, it is not money. And when it becomes money, you leave it, it goes, it runs. So, that is how you can never have really the money. What happens is you get only the attachment of it. Then similarly about other persons, you feel, yes, I have got this man or that woman, my husband or my wife, my so-and-so, my so-and-so. Now, does it ever become yours? What happens is you just get attached to it. You get bound by that. That is the net result. You never get those things. What you get is only attachment. My so-and-so. What claim do you have on any of those things? Nothing. Rather, when you try to press your claim, the eruptions of quarrels and all that happens, the peace gets disturbed. Why? Because you were trying to press your claim where you really never had any. So, that is how we see so many problems come in our life. I press the claim that, well, you are my son, you must behave as I tell you. You are my. But, well, it doesn't work. They have their own minds, their own personalities, their own ideas, and it doesn't work as mine. You are my wife, you should behave like this. No, wife has his own independent personality. Why should that? But that attachment is there all the time. It keeps on feeling my. When you know that the Lord is your very self, and the whole universe therefore is you yourself. There is nothing mine. When there is nothing mine, what happens? Now the attachment goes away. So this knowledge, what happens? Vitaraga, free from attachment. You are now not attached to imperishable. You are now not attached to perishable, transitory things, which just goes away. You cannot attach, you don't attach yourself to all these perishable, transitory, impermanent things. And thus, you save yourself from this terrible pain that comes to you. What happens when I am attached to something perishable? See the psychology of it. I attach myself to something that is temporary. Now, because it is temporary, by its very nature, it goes away. I am attached to it. I try to hold on to it. But it has to go away by its very nature. And thus, as it goes away, I feel the pain of its going. Oh, so sad. You know that friend of mine just decided to leave, just walked away. So much of pain is felt because of attachment. It is everything that you come together has to also break apart. This is the law, friend. This is the obvious truth of association. There is no possibility that those things can remain permanent all the time. It is not possible at all in the very nature of the things. It is therefore one feels the pain of that because of attachment. So when you know that there is no I and mine, there is one reality that pervades everything, and thus you do not then attach yourself to these changing objects. These attachments to the changing objects has another counterpart that we feel as fear. Whenever you are attached to something, you are scared that it will go away, it will not be mine, because it is really not going to be mine, and therefore that fear comes, you know, that it will not be mine. And we have lot of say money accumulated. Attachment makes us accumulate, and with it comes fear. If it goes away, if the stocks go down and all that I have goes away. When it is going up, we never complain, you know. If when my money is going up, I don't make any complaint. But it cannot go up all the time, it has to go down to go up. So, it is when it goes down, then Triveni starts complaining. You say, what is this? It is going down and no money with me and all that. There is this fear, you see, that fear that it is that what I have now will go away. It has to go away, but when we try to hold on to it, we are scared that it will go away. Why our life has so much fear? We don't want fear, friends, but it is there. What is the cause of this fear? Our attachment to perishable, impermanent objects. Those objects have to go away, and since in the background of the mind we know that they are going to go away, we are scared. That attachment makes us scared. That is the one and only cause of fear. I am worried about dying. Is death not certain? Tell me. And even if you keep on getting worried or fearful about it, you may get terribly scared about dying. Can that stop death? It doesn't stop death. It can come to you any time. It is continuously, stalking us. It is at any time it can just pounce upon us. There is no guarantee. This moment is there, next moment somebody can die. There is no age or that kind of bar on that. Many die as infants. Many die at a very young age. There is no such rule that I am only 25, so I have another at least 75 years to live or 50 years to live. You cannot depend on that. Many die at the young age. And there are various ways in which one dies. Sometimes you ascribe a reason, sometimes you cannot find a reason that why it happened. It just happens. So, yet since we are attached to this body, which has to go, it is impermanent. We have seen this in our life, you know, that it is body is so impermanent. When you were a child, baby, 1 year old, the body was different. You grew up. when you grow up, say 12-year-old, you become different, look different, the body has grown. You grow 25-year, body looks different. You grow 70-year-old, body is different. It is a process of change that you are calling body. It is really not anything, it is just a process of continuous flux that you are calling, that is the body. One gets attached to that. One tries to hold on to that. Well, not possible. And thus, that fear, what will happen if it goes away? You try to hold on to it, cannot hold on to it. The whole life we keep on living with fear. Do we want to live in fear, Triveni? Yes? No? Okay. We don't want to live in fear. So, it is... So, what is the cause of fear? Getting ourselves tied to the changing thing. So, when we are not attached to the changing, then we will become free from the fear also. And this you can verify in your own life. Everything here is verifiable. And then what other thing? Anger. Raga, bhaya, krodha. These three words. Attachment, fear and anger. This, why anger comes? I want something. It doesn't come to me. I don't get it. Or even if I get it, after a while it goes away. So, the so-called love, attachment sometimes gets called love, you know. Actually, it is not so. But in our worldly relations, we glorify our attachments by calling them as love. So, that love is there, but when my loved one does not do what I want, anger replaces that feeling of attachment. The other day one lady was telling me, she is very otherwise very loving and very caring to her husband and all that, but something that the husband did and she didn't like it at all and was so terribly angry. It was just 2 days back. And she was just speaking all sorts of things about him, that he is such a bad person, it is all, it is, my life is whole misery. Now I married this fellow, I should have more sense before doing that. Now, and that is now the about 35 years back, you can imagine, you see. And, or more, I am not sure. But every year she has been cursing all that at least twice or thrice a month, you see. So, anger. Whenever you have so-called tremendous attachment, the anger also comes there. That why this fellow is not doing like this. And so that becomes very bad. I remember when my mom did not give me what I want, angry feeling would come. At that time it would appear that there is no one in the world worse than my mother. And the worst person possible in the world is my mom at that time. It happens, you know, that especially the teenager growing children, what happens is they want to do many things that, and the parents are a little bit apprehensive, so they try to put, no, you can't do that, you can't do these things. And this monster mom, it is monster mom, it is... that is the automatic feeling. It is not that why? The anger wells up there. Wherever there is attachment, anger wells up. And we are attached to our pet ideas of right and wrong. And somebody does not do like that, we feel that they are evil. Anger wells up on them. We at that time are not able to see that they are doing the same thing that we do. But when they do it, it is wrong and they are evil, and therefore the anger wells up. They should be killed. They should be removed. There should be no evil person in this world, so let me kill everybody, you know, all of them. And in the process, how evil I become, see? I am not aware of that. But that is how the anger destroys us. What we call religion, really, friends, when we speak of religion or speak of God, many of us get that feeling that, oh, we don't want that, you know, what that God and religion and all, we don't have anything to do with it. But all these great qualities, we all cherish them. We all want that our life should be having a commitment, our life should have some permanent values for which to strive, like the truth. We all want to strive for truth. We also want to live a fearless life. We want to be fearless. Also, we all know that anger is such a big impediment. Anger just clouds our judgment. Anger destroys our real person. And we do not want, therefore, to be angry. So, we all want to develop these virtues. And that, in fact, is the efficacy of religion. These religious truths that we are discussing, they help us to develop these great qualities that we all look for, whether a person believes in God or doesn't believe in God, whether a person belongs to a particular religion or doesn't belong. All of us really cherish these great human virtues, human qualities. And how to get that? Well, that is being described, that connect yourself, join yourself to that which is permanent, your own nature. The I, just as we have seen that, the I that you feel when you were 1 year old, that I remains the same. You say that I did this when I was 2 year old. So what is the indication, what does it indicate? That although the body underwent so many changes, that I remains the same. So attach yourself not to the temporary but to the permanent. In fact, you don't have to attach yourself to the permanent. Just break and just give up the attachment to the impermanent, perishable things. Know that they are not you and they are not yours. And thus, this knowledge will help us. That it says further, that then you automatically take refuge in that which is permanent. Now we try to take refuge in that which is in itself impermanent, that which has no its own locus standi at all. We take refuge in that, like taking refuge in money. We say that, well, let God protect us. But we feel that God, after all, may not protect. But this $20,000 that I have, they will protect me. People have this feeling. We all are subject to this kind of foolish idea. When we examine it, it reveals that how foolish it is. And yet we harbor such ideas that I seek my security in $1 million. And God is there, maybe. What to speak of $1 million? Even if I have a quarter in my pocket, that Swami Turiyananji used to say, that if I have a quarter in my pocket, my faith to that extent goes to that quarter, you know, that feeling of security, that God will protect. But if suppose God forgets, then that quarter will protect me. So we harbor such ideas. But when we know, when we examine that how can they protect me? They themselves have no locus standi. And we get to know these things by the just examining that those who were millionaires counting their millions, when the stocks fell down, they were all in big debts. They have nothing. So it is like that. Many who had big homes, they just overnight they had lost everything. Because this is the nature of these things. In the war, when Germany was losing in the Second World War, you could carry what was that German coin? Marks. That German currency marks. People used to carry in huge gunny bags, you know, big bags. And with those they couldn't buy even a little bread. Because bread had more value now, and the mark, that currency, is anyway doomed now. Nobody wants to take that. So those who had faith in the currency, I have got a million marks with me. What happens to those million marks? They are gone. They have no value at all. It is just finished. So those things which themselves stand on a very flimsy ground, how can they give us protection? When you seek therefore the protection from Lord, who is permanent, who is always there, then you have hope. So this detachment from these perishable goods and attaching ourselves to the imperishable, that brings us the real sense of security in life. Then jnana tapasa, this idea that knowledge is the great purifier, purified by the austerity and knowledge. One can take the meaning like that, or the knowledge itself is an austerity. Shankara has taken that meaning, that knowledge itself is the austerity. That when you, there are so many different types of austerities people perform, like let me have fast in, every Saturday I will fast. Saturday I don't have to go to work, so no problem. I will fast even if I feel weak, doesn't matter, I will just sleep. Let me fast on Saturday. So that is good, but usually people end up that tomorrow I am going to fast. So Friday they eat a lot. And then again on Sunday they need a feast. So it doesn't really work much. So. But it is still, one practices such things, that is good. It has some benefits, that these external austerities. But the real austerity is restraining oneself from the attractions of all the different perishable objects. The perishable form attracts us. The perishable sound attracts us. The perishable taste attracts us. These things pull us. We become enslaved by them. These things, they pull us, and then apply the knowledge there that no, that is not real. And although it is pulling me, I will not get pulled. I will stand firm. Don't get pulled. That is austerity. The not eating is a form of it. I will fast on Saturday. And what on Saturday, I put a little practice of that, that the food is attracting me, but I tell myself, hey, no, not today, tomorrow. So it is, you postpone, you don't kill it there. It is difficult, so the mind doesn't listen to it. If you say no, it doesn't listen. So you say, okay, tomorrow, not today. Just for Saturday, it is a little help. But the main principle is this: whatever perishable things are attracting us, whatever temporary things are attracting us, put the knowledge there. That is not real, that is going to bind me, that is going to be very bad for my life, and so I will not get entangled in any of these things. That practice through the knowledge is real austerity. That is the true austerity. That is why it is called the austerity of knowledge. And when that is the real purifier, and that makes our life really pure. It is nothing else makes us pure. Not that by taking a bath 20 times you become pure. No, it is maybe externally you may become clean, but the desires, the attachments, they just are there in the mind that makes our actions all impure, evil. But when this knowledge that I am all-pervading reality, that knowledge makes us really pure. And then that means automatically that you understand your oneness with the divine, that you know that you are the divine. Divine is not somewhere there in the seventh heaven or whatever. It is the Hindu mythology has, you know, the seven layers of that's upper worlds and seven layers of the nether worlds. It is all mythological, these ideas. So just to show that one can evolve like that. But that God is not just sitting somewhere there. It is right within us. Whenever you say I, you are really thinking of God. That is your real nature. See, think of I, free from any limitation. It is a beautiful, very sublime meditation. And nothing in life can make you evolve more and happier than trying to separate the I from the perishable identifications. Body is perishable, so I am not this body. See how much freedom it automatically brings to you. Just see, friends, it brings so much of joy. It cannot be compared at all to those silly fragments of distorted joys that one gets by eating ice creams or going to parties and like that. So it is just see, I am not this body, and a tremendous gate of that joy will open in our life. So when one knows this truth, one is automatically connected to God. And Lord tells here that many have experienced this in life. Bhavo jnana tapasa puta madbhava magata. You are not the first to try it. It is not that you have been given a glass that it can be a nectar or a poison. Somebody had those two glasses kept there, that filled with similar looking nice drink. And man is urging his wife, take. He says, you take. He says, honey, you first. You first take it. And then she thinks, oh, how loving my husband is. So she takes and drinks it. And then he tells, okay, how are you feeling? Okay, fine. Are you feeling any funny sensation in the heart or in the stomach? No, nothing. You are not feeling any headache or any uneasiness? No. Okay, fine. now throw this other glass. Because I was told one of these is poison. So it is a test. So this is not like that when you realize the truth. It is not that many have realized. You are not testing it. You don't have to be worried whether this is going to be right or whether it is going to just be destructive. I will be cutting all these attachments, but well, then will that destroy my life? No. And this has been a tried and trusted path. It has been tried by many, many people. For ages this has been tried by people in all different countries, people of all different hues, people of all different ages, and they have arrived at their divine nature. So Lord says that this is what we should do. Then why do everybody not do that? Why, Lord, you are all powerful, why don't you then inspire everybody to do that? You are all powerful, you can change the mind of the people to come there to follow this path. Why don't you do that? Many spiritual aspirants have this complaint that will be discussed by Lord in the next verse. That why don't you do this to me? I am getting attached again and again, but then Lord was so compassionate to Saint Teresa of Avila. See, he removed all the obstacles from her path. He was so merciful and kind to so many other saints. Why is he not so kind to me? He should just change my mind. That's all. Why is he not doing that? So Lord gives answer to this thought. We shall discuss that in the next class today. The time is finished. Any questions? Yes, George?
As you probably gathered, I've been hung up on this IAM business.
Is it your business? Okay. Yes.
But I keep telling myself, and I think I'm right, in saying, I am not the body, and I am not the mind.
Right.
I am the Atman.
Yes, yes. That's right.
And that's the only solution.
Yes.
I am.
Yes.
Not my body, not my mind.
Yes, yes. That is the only solution. And that is what is being prescribed also. The other things are only aid to this. Like you only solution, you know, to hang a picture is to drive a nail in the wall. But then you need tools to drive the nail in the wall. So you get a hammer and a nail and that stuff. So similarly, to get this knowledge that I am not the body, not the mind, I am the unlimited, all-pervading self. I am in all the bodies, the self is the same. I am not only in this body called George Parker, but I am also in the body called Olu. The I there are not different. No? The same I is in this every person. One can be a person called Donna, another can be person called Janavi, another can be person called Vishwanath. I are same one I. It is this is the only solution. You are right.
Yeah. But I mean, most people don't think that. They say I am, like movie stars and engineers.
That is how we get attached, you know. Because of this ignorance, one gets attached. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. Gita Sugita Kartavya किमन्यत् शास्त्रविस्तरैः या स्वयं पद्मनाभस्य मुखपद्माद्विनिसृता एकं शास्त्रं देवकी पुत्रगीतम् एको देवो देवकी पुत्र एव एको मन्त्रः तस्य नामानि यानि कर्माप्येकं तस्य देवस्य सेवा श्रीकृष्णार्पणमस्तु।